好，谢长。
I would just introduce you briefly.
Right? Yes.
It's a tremendous pleasure and privilege as Master St. John's to be able to welcome His Holiness the Dalai Lama to this college. We're extremely honored, Your Holiness, that you have agreed to speak to us today in this beautiful chapel. The Dalai Lama is one of the very small number of people in the world for whom the phrase, "he needs no introduction," is a genuine statement. Indeed, when we announced that His Holiness was going to speak today, within 24 hours, some 1,400 members of the college and the university had requested tickets. This talk is therefore being relayed, I gather the technical word is streamed, to another audience across the road in the Divinity School, and has also been broadcast live to the world on YouTube. In addition, His Holiness has graciously agreed to give a second talk here tomorrow to enable more people to listen to his words and to engage in discussion with him. Although no introduction is needed, I would like to remind everyone that His Holiness is tireless in spreading his message of non-violence and religious harmony. He has received many honors for his work and for his leadership, including the Nobel Prize for Peace in 1989, the Christmas Humphreys Prize from the United Kingdom in 2005, the Award of Honorary Citizenship by Canada in 2006, one of only five people ever to be recognized in this way. He received a Congressional Gold Medal from the United States in 2007, and the Templeton Prize in 2012. When the Dalai Lama received this latter award, he donated the entire prize of over £1 million to the Save the Children charity in India. It's therefore a great privilege to introduce His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, to give a talk entitled "Educating the Heart." Your Holiness.
I think from here, the closer I can see your face. Brothers and sisters, I'm extremely happy having opportunity to share with respected leaders, scholars, and also students. So, perhaps I begin this way. I born in one remote village in northeast Tibet. But my mother, of course, uneducated, illiterate, just sort of a villager mother, but tremendous sort of warm-heartedness. Her children, my brothers, sisters, I think all of us almost never see my mother's sort of angry face. Very, very kind woman. So I received, I think, maximum affection from our mother. So I often used to telling people, half joke, half serious, as a villager child in 1930s, 30s. So nothing for play, right? Nothing. No choice. So the only, the happy moment is my mother carry me on her shoulder and then go around. Even when she working in the field, often she carry me. So, and of course, very, very sort of loving kind sort of mother. So that, I think, a little bit spoiled me, I think. So when I sort of carry by my mother on her shoulder, and I hold my mother's two ear. If I want to go this side, if go that side, go like that. If mother not listen, and I shout, and my feet, you see, bang, 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 like that. So, because of my mother's sort of, too much sort of kindness, so seems, you see, her child, then, of course, at that time, I'm youngest, her child, so a little bit, they spoil. As a result, the child become a little bit aggressive. So I always feel the first time you see, cultivate warm-heartedness at that time because mother so kind. So I received maximum sort of affection from my mother. So that, you see, the immense help to show others also affection, more compassionate attitude. Then, of course, later, the Buddhist training, study, then use mainly logical sort of thinking, that immense help to sustain or further develop warm-heartedness. So now here are two things. One, biologically develop that thing. Then second, use brain education. Then sort of develop full conviction or warm-heartedness is key factor for happy person, for happy mind. Then also, at the age 16, I lost my freedom. At age 24 or 25, I lost my own country. The most part of my life, from 25 now up to nearly 78, I remain as a refugee. One way, very sad. One way, new opportunity, meeting with people. Different background, different field. Some religious people, religious-minded people, or non-religious-minded, and just ordinary people, or very scientific-minded people, or scientists also, and a variety of people. So since my childhood, and also the way training our mind, the curiosity. Whenever we touch some topic, I always think, what's the reason? What's the reason? Perhaps I think I may sort of mention the Buddha's own sort of word he mentioned. Oh, my follower, monks, and scholars should not accept my teaching out of faith, out of devotion, but rather thorough investigation and experiment. So we train that way. So we always, you see, ask question, question, raise question, 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 then find out answer, like that. So that the immense help to acquire more knowledge. You know. And also immensely helpful to meet different people from their own experiences. So now, my point is, as a result of meeting number of sort of educationists, thinkers, social workers, and medical scientists, or in general, and also the scientists about brain scientists. Conclusion. Present humanity facing, this is some problem. Some of these problems, of course, due to nature disaster or some other things. But many of the problems or difficulties actually our own creation, man-made problem. Man-made does not mean no exclusive female, but sometimes female also create problems. So in any way, humans, our own created sort of problem. So then, here, big contradiction. 7 billion human beings, no one want problem. Everyone want no problem, peaceful. Everyone want, even animal want that. This is not a question of religious faith or not. Even animal is a want peaceful life, do not want problem. We certainly do not want problem. Meantime, many problems actually our own creation. Then why it happened? These problems deliberately created by human being? No. Different aim, different motivation, but method often become wrong. That's why, although they want peaceful life, but because of their way of approach, that goal, unrealistic approach happened due to short-sightedness and narrow-minded. And ultimately, extreme self-centered attitude. Just think oneself. So in order to gain something, no hesitation, exploit other, take advantage on other, bully on other, cheating other. So then, any unrealistic approach always bring disaster. Any field, even with one T, you should know there how much water, how many milk or sugar or these things. So it should be realistic approach. Just one tea, so one water, some water, and equal sort of milk, and then tea bag too much, or then sugar too much. Then you can't drink that water, that tea. Even the small things must be realistic. So, short-sighted. I want some sort of benefit immediately without thinking consequences. Now, this war, violence also, suppose gain some sort of victory, some benefit to yourself, regardless of other suffering. Then the very concept of war, come. and self-centered attitude. Here, I think, too much stress. The gap, we and they, me and them, like that. So that's the basis of concept of violence. Destroy other. It's gain something to me. So these are not necessarily a lack of education. Now here, the modern world, material development with help of technology, science, really highly developed. Then these sort of science, knowledge about science or technology, these things also much depend on education. So existing education system is actually oriented about material values. So it seems quite clear in existing modern education system, not much talk about inner values or ethics. I remember one time in Italy, Bologna University. I think there are 1,000 years was the anniversary. I remember that. I mean, they give me some of the honorary degree or something. So their custom, is in their custom, some peculiar hat, and then one ring is put in your finger. So Buddhist monk not allow that ring. But in order to respect their sort of tradition, I put that ring at least 1 hour or one hour or 1.5 hours, like that. So I remember quite clear. So that I think one of the oldest sort of separate education institution. I think older than this, I think, Cambridge. So when separate education institutions started, then naturally moral ethics, inner values, these church take full care, take full responsibility. And also, I think family value also in some extent. So perhaps at that time, I think quite sufficient, quite balanced. Now time passes, the impact from church also sometimes a little bit reduce. And then family value also is reduced. So now the institution which take care only brain development, not warm-heartedness. Only that way, then something missing, something inadequate. Now the modern some scientists actually is mentioned, even for physical health, healthy body need healthy mind. So these days I also describe hygiene of healthy body. Similarly, we need hygiene of emotion for healthy mind. So equally important, educate how to take care about our body. Similarly, there must be education how to take a healthy mind, healthy emotion. It is quite some subject there, important subject. Look, in Indian tradition, the tradition where single-pointed mind, or practice of single-pointed mind, and also the insight that usually the Sanskrit meditation, kasadi meditation, 말해, samadhi and vipassana. So both practice, you see, the, just you see, the making shape about our mind. So therefore, in order to carry that kind of practice, you see, the fuller knowledge about mind, about emotion is necessary. So, more explanation about mind, about emotion. And particularly in Buddhist Nalanda tradition, Buddhist tradition, also you see a lot of explanation about mind. So therefore, now last nearly now 30 years, I develop closer discussion with modern scientists, mainly four fields, cosmology, neurobiology, and physics, particularly like quantum physics, then psychology. So last nearly 30 years of experience, we Buddhists in physical world, their finding, their knowledge is immense help to enrich our understanding about matter or world like that. And then for the scientist, explanation or information about emotion, about mind, the whole system of emotion or mind, which mentioned in these ancient sort of, or say the tradition, immense help to the modern scientist. Not only those psychologists, but also, you see, the brain specialist, in order to know the work or function of brain, the information about emotions and close relation, brain and emotion, these things. So now, I think early period when we start dialogue with scientists, mainly my own, out of my own curiosity. Then later, now I think about 15 years, you see the attraction about our work among scientists also increasing. And they really found some useful sort of usefulness about this dialogue. And among the Tibetan Buddhist sort of monastic institution, the teachers also now gradually realize some useful sort of usefulness from their sort of knowledge. So, then we selected some sort of student, mainly monk student, who already sort of spent at least 15, 20 years study. So small group carry study. Now that become very convincing, very beneficial. So last year, now we formally decided in our bigger monastic institution, now lesson, science lesson must introduce, must include our curriculum. So these things, you see, they, through our own sort of experience or contact with a variety of people and with full cooperation with these sort of some sort of institution like Emory University, Stanford University, and also Wisconsin University, and some others. So, become quite clear, quite useful, quite convincing. So now here, the more compassionate mind here, the blood circulation, brain, normal, and also the blood pressure reduce. Amount of stress also reduce. The person become much more easier. my own experience. Of course, not worthy to mention, but very small. I think more than zero, little bit. when I around 2021, I visited China. When I participate sort of formal sort of function and also the informal meeting, I always a little bit nervous. Of course, some other factors also there. Quite nervous. See, a little bit hot here. Like that. Then the 56, I came to India, the Buddha Jayanti celebration, 2,500 years sort of anniversary, about Buddha's sort of enlightenment. Of course, this freedom, democratic country, but formality, when the leaders, Indian president, when we're meeting, it's more formality. Again, a little bit sort of nervous. Then, when I give some talk, people, they say, a little sort of anxious or nervous. Then gradually, I develop full conviction. We are the same human being. Mentally, emotionally, physically, we are the same. I'm just one of the 7 billion human beings, humanity. No differences. Differences only in secondary level. Races, faith, nationality or culture, different language, these things. That's secondary. Fundamental level, we are same human being. Now, for example, here, when I look at you, I'm just another human being. If I sort of stress, I'm Tibetan, I'm Buddhist, and even I consider I'm Dalai Lama, that kind of mental attitude make some kind of distance from the audience. That creates nervousness. So often, consider you, myself, one of you. No matter how sort of how say the appearance, some differences, but deep inside, everyone want happy life. And everyone have the right to achieve that. Now question is, how to achieve real happiness, joyfulness, inner peace? Money? Power? No. Money only provide us physical comfort, not mental. It seems sometimes middle class people, not many money, when the global economic crisis happened, I think these people, I think, are more comfortable than those billionaires who really think about most important is money. Always think money, money, money. Then this global economic crisis happened. I think they lose their sleep, I think. Too much worry, too much concern, isn't it? So you see, more money, sometimes you see, bring more worry and also jealousy because of too much competitive sort of competitive sort of feeling. You see, that creates jealousy. That creates distrust. So people who surrounded distrust people, how can achieve real happy life? Full of suspicion, anxiety, anger, frustration. Good food, good shelter, good facility won't help these things, only mental level. So therefore, now these things not necessarily related with religious faith. So these days, full agreement, from my friend, scientist. They openly say they are non-believer. When I discuss with these sort of scientists, I never touch about religious sort of matter. I never discuss with scientists about next life or salvation, these things. Simply discuss about how to achieve healthy body, healthy mind, and how to tackle these complicated sort of the mind or disturbed sort of emotions. So we learned one important tradition from India. India, almost 3,000 years, one concept of secularism, which respect all religions and also respect non-believer. So now today, recently I saw one report. One Indian national newspaper is mentioned. I think the source come from, I don't know. But that, you see, report is mentioned. That out of 7 billion human beings, over 1 billion, formally stated non-believer. Then also, frankly speaking, you see, among those supposed believer, now I also see, I think we spiritual sort of brothers, sisters, you see, sometimes our belief only in church or in Buddhist temple. Outside temple, outside church, not very serious. So that's why among the religious sort of people, even religious leaders, some corruptions. And also some exploitation, cheating people. I mean, frankly speaking, sometimes I sort of publicly sort of telling when I give some Buddhist teaching, I publicly sort of telling the religion sometimes teach us how to act of hypocrisy. In church, in temple, or say nice things, love, compassion, forgiveness. But real life, not much serious about these practices. So therefore, this is lacking of real conviction about inner value. So religion also, you see, become disposable of our destructive emotion, like that. So we need some sort of education system from kindergarten up to university level. Educate in order to achieve healthy body, healthy mind. You must pay more attention about our emotion. In order to do that, you need some knowledge about the whole system, or sometimes I call map of emotion. That's important. So purely secular way, so that can be universal. And also easy to fit, to include in secular education field. If these moral ethics based on religious faith, then it will never be universal and difficult to fit. Therefore, India's constitution itself is based on secular. Because, you see, the fact that India, when they got independence, already multi-religious sort of community, multi-culture. So therefore, constitution also, you see, they because of the decide secular basis. So according to Indian sort of understanding, secular, not at all some negative sort of negative thing towards religion. No, never respect all religion. No preference, this religion, that religion. So therefore, now we, some scientists in America, in their own sort of, what is it, the area or because of community, they already carry secular ethics, education about secular ethics, they already carry as an experiment. Now we decide in India, with cooperation with some universities in India, now we already committed making draft how to introduce in secular education field about this education about, firstly, education about information, about mind or emotion, then the importance of these emotions, then how to tackle this negative emotion, and how to strengthen this positive emotion without touching religion. So that we already sort of doing that. Now perhaps, I think within 1 year, perhaps we may produce sort of some sort of draft sort of paper. So I hope so this famous university here, I think we I want to touch, and then we want to seek your advice. And also see, these institutions really historically very, very important sort of education institution. Now, if we introduce sort of education, taking care about physical, about to care material value, and also take care about emotion, about mind, then that will be some kind of guarantee. Student come from this institution, this sort of university, 99% will be constructive person, not destructive person. Otherwise, you see, these troublemaker, many of these troublemakers, actually highly educated, isn't it? But they use, you see, this knowledge under control of negative emotion, hatred. For example, the September 11th event, the dull person cannot plan such things, cannot carry such sort of work. Very brilliant people, isn't it? Carefully sort of plan and carry their work step by step with top secret. So their brain is really very smart, but their whole, their brain guided by hatred, anger. Because we can't blame these people. They've grown up which atmosphere or environment only think matter and these things, and also based strong feeling of we and they, and create some kind of solid enemy. Then, you see, they utilize all their knowledge, all their energy to destroy so-called enemy that they consider as a victory. Actually, not. So therefore, I think education, warm-heartedness is, I feel, something very relevant, very important. So, of course, maybe Pasoda, too much was a presumptuous way. Presumptuous. I think talking these things in the front of great scholars, great highly intellectuals, person, professors, and the teachers. So maybe not worthwhile. But since you asked me to talk that, so I compelled to talk. Thank you. Now some questions.
Your Holiness, we're extremely grateful for your words. plenty of challenging questions and wonderful images that you gave us. You've kindly said that you will receive some questions. Perhaps if you would let me know when you've had enough questions, because I know you've had a very busy day. But I want to start by asking one of our fellows here at St. John's, Dr. Garatz, who will be asking our first question.
Sashidella, we are here at the University of Cambridge, which is world famous for its education. But its first-rate education focuses on the mind, in particular, analytical thinking. Now, based on your wonderful lecture, we would love to know what is really the most important that students and staff here can do to educate the heart as well. Thank you.
Yes, sir. In my view, and also as a result of many discussions with a number of sort of educationists, as I mentioned earlier, and scientists, and less with spiritual leaders, more is with scientists and educationists and thinkers. So now, here, I think long run, as I already mentioned, we already working some sort of a curriculum about mind, emotion. Then the further explanation which mind or emotion are destructive to yourself, your own sort of, yourself more sort of, more compassionate, usually develop inner strength, self-confidence. That way you can talk honestly, truthfully, and also you can carry your work transparently. If, last year I saw one article wrote by one American scientist. It mentioned those people who tell lies in daily life more often, in the physical level, more sort of stress. That I think quite true. Of course, I'm Buddhist monk, Buddhist practitioner. Basically, you see, no telling lie. From 1951 till 1959, March, I live with Chinese authority. So about 8-9 years, I also practice hypocrisy. That means when I meet some Chinese official, say, oh, wonderful, very good. And when I meet some Tibetan, oh, some grievance, oh, how bad, like that. So one person, you see, two attitude. So at that time, you see, much sort of stress and fear. I'm telling my sort of Chinese friend, nowadays when I met, so I tell, 9 years, I also compelled to practice hypocrisy. And after I came to India, I really liberated practice of hypocrisy. So really, telling untrue, where deep inside you feel some uncomfortable, not sort of question of moral thing, but actually, you see, you feel, oh, this now I tell some lie. So how can remain this lie, Kasota?
Secret.
So therefore, you see, honest, truthful, automatically carry our conduct transparent. So you get more inner strength. Then also, you see, that brings, as I mentioned earlier, trust and genuine friendship. So, now, firstly, this is more information about these, among these different emotions or minds or thoughts. Some are, even scientifically, medical science now clearly sort of confirm such emotions are very bad for our health. And such emotions are very good for our health and peaceful atmosphere within our family, within our community. So that first, simply educate about world of mind emotion. Then such things are harmful, such things because of the helpful. Then they show method how to deal with this destructive emotion, how to sort of increase this positive emotion. That way, so from kindergarten, very simple way, then more, because of the deeper, wider, and up to university level. I think we can prepare that. So this is, I think, long run. Then immediate, I think teachers in classroom, is while you teach your subject, and you must show the real sort of sense of concern of their well-being. Actually, like this university, really making shape of students' long future. And through individual future, individual student, it also can affect, I mean, leaderships also come from these young student. So I said the way training these people are really because of the quite effect, some relations, even global level, leadership come from such institution. They from right from the beginning, I mean, they carry their study in the atmosphere of full love, full compassion, sense of concern. So their mind, very fresh and very positive. Then months, years go like that. I think student, not only knowledge, but also becoming more warm-hearted or compassionate person. I think that's important. So I think a teacher, not only teach them your subject, but also, you see, show the real human value through your own sort of attitude. That, I think, important. Then other, I don't know. I think the concerns of people, the scholars, teachers, I think from time to time, some discussions, how to fill up something lacking in existing education field or system. So more discussion. The world changing, reality changing. Now more problem come, I think, because of the population increasing. And also one serious matter, gap rich and poor. We must sort of reduce this gap. So that means the poorer section of people, their living standard must raise. So a lot of work, a lot of complication. All these from sort of today, the motivation, inner strength, taking seriously care or concern of these poorer section of people's sort of way of life, living standard, like that. So then nature resources also is some difficulties, some limitations. So full of problems. I think within this 21st century will not be easy century. A lot of problems, a lot of difficulties come. So we must be equipped how to tackle these things. Ultimately, motivation. And motivation also is a source of our courage, optimism. Too much negative emotion easily is brought down your courage, like that. So therefore, I think more discussions, those scholars, concerned teachers, professors, I think whether existing thing really sufficient or not. More discussions. That I hope.
Our next question comes from one of our young students, one of our undergraduates, Alex Garten.
Your Holiness, What do you think are the respective roles of love and wisdom in religion, and which is more important for attaining enlightenment?
I think some differences due to philosophical views. I think like Christianity or Islam and many other sort of religion, which basic faith is considered a creator. So single-pointed faith towards Creator, towards God. Then I think that, in front of you, this is not Kasuta, I feel a little shy. But again, now you see the faith, single-pointed faith towards God. It's actually, you see, you totally dedicate to God. So that immense help to reduce extreme self-centered attitude, isn't it? I'm nothing but God's creation. So Buddhists use no soul theory. So sometimes we call selflessness theory. This is a different method, but same effect, same goal. So here, according to theistic religion, I feel the faith, emphasis, importance for faith, single-pointed faith towards God. I think that very, very powerful. And this very life created by God. No concept of previous life. Next life, difficult to say. You remain some period in coffin, then after final judgment, go to heaven or hell. So there is next life, something like that. But previous life, no previous life. This very life created by God. So that brings strong feeling of intimacy with God. The more feeling that, more willingness to follow God's way. So God, when we describe God, infinite love. No theistic religion say God is full of anger. Nobody say that. Full of love, full of compassion. So we ourselves is created by such sort of force, full of love. So we also have this sort of potential of practice of love. These things mainly through faith and compassion, forgiveness. This practice brings your own salvation. Although the previous Pope, the German Pope, I had an opportunity meeting him, wonderful. So he mentioned faith and reason must go together. He once was mentioned. So you see, he indicate the wisdom also, you see, involved. One thing. Then non-theistic religion, like Jainism and Buddhism, and particularly Buddhism, the practice of compassion itself, you see, used by logical sort of approach. reasoning. How much benefit? Selfish. How much? Humbleness. About these different emotions. So analyze according to your own experience and also experience the people's explanation. Through that way, we analyze. So Buddhist way of approach, compassion and wisdom must go together, combinedly. That's Buddhist way. Like that.
Thank you.
Our third question comes from one of our graduate students who's undertaking research into modern yoga.
Your Holiness, my question is with regards to yoga. It is a phenomenon that has grown exponentially, particularly over the past few decades. But it is also a philosophy rooted in religions of the world, Hinduism, Jainism, and of course Buddhism. The expansion has been largely with an emphasis on physical exercise. How do you see room for broadening of heart education in this phenomenon?
Yes, yoga. There are a variety of yoga practice. So these days, some people they consider, you see, yoga is something physical exercise and some kind of breathing control, like that. So mainly concerned about physical health. And a healthy body also is some impact, mind more calm. No. But and then some other sort of meaning of yoga also is training your mind. So there are variety. If you take yoga, simply physical exercise, then also you see joking. Oh, 1 kilometer, 2 kilometer, that's also part of yoga. So then even dogs also you see practice yoga. We make a distinction what kind of sort of yoga. So I think it should include yoga, not only taking care about the physical sort of exercise, physical health, but also some related with our emotion. That, I think, more long-lasting effect. The physical sort of exercise. Now, for example, now person who now 78-year-old, now this knee's problem, not easily sort of the create opportunity practice of yoga. But yoga which did with mind or emotion, the physical doesn't matter. I can meditate, I can think, I can analyze analytical meditation. So no problem. So I think long lasting, even I think my own case, perhaps my age reach after 10 years, 88. After 20 years, 98. Hopefully, my brain is still working. So I think that kind of sort of yoga with related to my mind or emotion can practice even, you see, 80, 90, even 100 years old. Physical exercise, then goodbye. You cannot carry. Isn't it like that? So I think you should find out what kind of yoga, and not just sort of relying on one person say, oh, my yoga practice is the best. Don't believe that. Or further investigate. That's very, very important. Sometimes you see teacher of these things, they say, like some appetizing, best, cheapest, quickest. Just appetizing way. So that also is a happen. So you should learn or investigate different yoga, then make some comparison. That's very important. Yes.
Okay.
I think your chair there, I think chair, yeah, wash that. Yeah,
that one? No. I'm fine.
I feel uncomfortable. Oh. Why do you...
You just did for 45 minutes.
Ask questions.
Okay.
That's much better, yes. Why? Otherwise... Why? While you see, we enjoy question and answer, he likes some kind of punishment. Whole time to stand. I don't like that.
I might enjoy standing.
but this moment, you feel happy. But when you reach your own home, you really feel tired and remain like that. So better to sit. Yes, now next question.
Thank you for your compassion. The next question, I think a lot of students would resonate very strongly with this question. So, Mubin.
What advice would you give to students who are unsure what to do once they've completed their studies?
Oh. I think I already mentioned we really need some pay about our inner world, about mind, about emotion. You from India?
South Africa.
And your ancestor Indian, from India. So, you should pay more attention about ancient Indian psychology. That's, I think, really worthwhile. And then people, I already mentioned, we need some kind of study or education about secular ethics. That means take concern about warm-heartedness. Then my daily... After finishing my talk here, I usually get up now these days about 3 o'clock in the morning. I think most of you, I think, enjoy nice dreams, I think. get up about 3, then some analytical meditation, and then also, like part of my yoga practice, the part you shall say. But okay, joking. Even in my own room, you should go like that. And meantime, some sort of, with this rosary, recite something and go about 40 minutes like that. I always do. And then also, you see, some simple sort of yoga practice like that. And if I demonstrate to you something like that, some visualization, then... three times. Then... three times. Then again, three times. That's also quite good. And some kind of practice, they concentrate on breathing. Go, come in, go, where? Like that. 21, or sometimes 100, like that. So then, of course,
also shower. I always. I never use, what say, because taps are bath tap for preservation of water. But shower two times, one morning, one before my bed or like that. So I don't know how much water I really use. I don't know. So in any way, then evening, I go bed quite early, 6:30, 7. So now finish here, or still some time, about 4:30, my evening tea. As a Buddhist monk, no dinner. When I feel quite sort of hungry, and it seems, you see, I need some fuel. Then, with salutation to Buddha, few biscuits. That's my dinner. Those other sort of meal. And then, around 6:30, sleep. So usually 8-9 hours, very sound sleep, always. Oh, one thing, you see, time zone change. My sleep, no disturbances. I set my own watch, the local time. Then local time, about 6:30 p.m., 7, I already feel sleep. Then exactly the local time, next morning, around 2:30, 2:40, around 3, wake up. So my mind, I think, or say, the mental sort of time setup, I think it affects sleep, but not the what call the heavy work in toilet. No, time change, this whole time change. Even I make some effort. Didn't work. So I noticed, you see, physical sort of time, physical clock, and sleep clock, much related with mind. So mind set up. Now I must get up this time, local time, wake up. So I think if there is some sort of research work, I think should research how much sort of relation sleep and mind and this bowel, because bowels are a bowel movement and mind or something different. So like that. Next question.
I'm not sure we know how to follow what you have just said. but we'll try. So my next question, our next question comes from another fellow of the college, Dr. Galli.
Following changes at the heart of the Chinese Republic, social changes seems to be moving higher on the political agenda. So for instance, the one-child policy seems to be questioned. On the other hand, this has to be balanced with the unprecedented rise in the military and defense budget of China. Having visited China and Tibet in the last 15 years several times, I've been surprised, pleasantly surprised, by the openness at individual level for religion practice. And my question is whether you think that with the loosening of the social changes in China, there will be a loosening of religion plural practices, or that nationalisms in China might restrict even further the freedom of religion practice. Thank you.
Change
As China, People's Republic of China, last over 60 years, I usually see, describe four eras. Chairman Mao's era, Deng Xiaoping era, Jiang Zemin era, Wu Jintao era. So each era, some differences. So this shows the same Communist Party and the same authoritarian system. There is ability to act according new reality. I think during Mao's era, like a Cultural Revolution, deliberately destroy sort of the four old sort of tradition of these things, including religious faith. Now today, I think 3 years ago, I saw one report made by one Chinese university. According to their survey, Buddhist population in China, then over 300 million. Now, last year, I met some sort of Buddhist, Chinese Buddhist, and some businessmen, and also seems to some connection with some sort of leaders. According to them, nowadays in China, Buddhist population now over 400 million. And many of these Buddhists also is following Tibetan Buddhism. Now, as a matter of fact, nowadays, every week, some Chinese from mainland China come to see me. And many of these Chinese, when we met, dear, very faithful. They are genuine, they are interested about Buddhism, very, very sort of genuine. And similarly, population about Christian also increasing. Muslim, I don't know. But Christian numbers also is increasing. So, it is China, most populated nation and ancient nation. So China have, I think, a great sort of potential, make significant, contribution for global level. But in order to make significant constructive contribution, constructive role, they need trust, respect from rest of the world. That's lacking. Too much censorship. Too much censorship and distorted information. So that sometimes creates suspicion among the neighbors. I have a lot of sort of friends in Japan and Vietnam also, a communist, but many of them receive very much suspicion to the Chinese government. And then, of course, India, now last over 50 years, my home. And I always describe Indians historically our guru. All our knowledge we learned from Indian masters. All our knowledge come from India, mainly Nalanda Institution, like that. So therefore, and then also you see my sort of commitment about promotion of ahimsa, I mean non-violence and compassion. This and religious harmony, this come from Indian tradition. So I describe myself as a messenger of ancient Indian tradition, non-violence and religious harmony. So therefore, I have a very, very close link. Of course, more than that, I also, I think, the longest guest of Indian government. So, the India with China, two most populated nations. Then India, in spite of many drawbacks, India very, very stable because democracy, because rule of law and transparent. It seems to the Indian media, I think, very fond to bring more criticism rather than positive information. This is very helpful. That's a healthy sign. In totalitarian system in China, huge country, but a lot of problems. India, besides the sort of negative sort of what's the report, news, behind there, not much problem. Very stable. So I think China also eventually become like India. Transparent, rule of law, democratic system, then I think China really make significant contribution for betterment of the world. This is my view. So I'm very happy to see you quite often you visit China. You must go there. And the real sort of, one of the important cause of this problem is their ignorance, their fear. So you see, like you, visit and make sort of close sort of the friendship and then tell the truth. That one way their ignorance reduce, secondly, their fear reduce. My own sort of experience, when I first visited Soviet Union, 1979, you see, the government deliberately created some kind of sort of false impression. Unless Soviet Union prepare militarily well, the Western about to attack on Soviet Union. I know Western sort of mentality, Western sort of thinking. Before my visit to Soviet Union, 73, I visited Europe, including England. I know here, more fear. Something come from East Bloc, Warsaw Pact, isn't it? Oh, there is no sort of thinking or no tendency where thinking to attack Soviet Union. But in Soviet Union, they deliberately create some kind of sort of impression. So similarly, look, North Korea now. They sort of loudly say America going to destroy them. So they have to prepare like that. So China, during sort of the 50s and 60s, they always say, the American imperialist going to attack China, going to destroy China. So they always consider America as a number one enemy. Soviet Union, their number one friend. Then later, gradually, Soviet Union, their enemy. America become their friend. So these things, I think, now I think no longer any fear among the Chinese. I think one sort of clear sort of, or say the indication, large number of Chinese students sent to America, sent to England. I just met some Chinese sort of student, about 100,000. Chinese student in England. In America also, I think, even more. So these are the indication. Now no longer much sort of fear. I think no single North Korean student, I think, here in America, I don't think. They're completely isolated. So these are source of danger. So go there, make friend, inform the reality, and make friends, reduce fear, inform them, reduce their ignorance. That's very, very important. Yes, now next question.
We're doing all right for
time. No, okay. No problem. Now, because of my sort of meeting with Chinese there, so Chinese student there, so delayed, come here. So now, till 4. No problem.
Till 4 it is.
My afternoon tea, 4:30. So sufficient time. So up to 4.
We'll send the master out just ahead of you so he can make the tea.
Yes, thank you.
Our next question is from one of our graduate students, Sandra.
Your Holiness, even recently we've seen new political conflicts emerging in Asia. Do you think that the tremendous success story of European post-war reconciliation and unification could one day become a role model for solving these long-standing political conflicts in Asia? Thank you.
Not very clear. Slowly. Oh. Yes. I think no doubt. It seems, you see, those imperialists, I think, become very mature. Especially British imperialists. It's one time, you see, there are a lot of colonial sort of rare. But give them their independence, their freedom. Then eventually the British, this small island, remained very small. So now eventually, the spirit of European Union, I think really, the wonderful sort of matured sort of idea or vision during First World War, Second World War, French and German, really, you see, killing each other. Right? But then, eventually, I think under the leadership of Adenauer and de Gaulle, you see, they eventually, you see, create the concept of European Union. The British are still a little bit sort of hesitant, isn't it? And Switzerland. So in any way, you see, these are, I think, out of their lot of suffering, out of violence, then they gradually realize common interest is more important than individual sovereignty, like that. So here, one of my tutor. About quantum physics, David Bohm, another one German, the von Weizsäcker, elder brother of former German president. So one time, you see, von Weizsäcker, he told me, when he was young, early 1920s or 30s, even I think 40s, of course 40s, every German eye, French is their enemy. Similarly, in French eye, also like that. Then he mentioned nowadays that kind of sort of attitude completely gone, completely changed. So far in Asia, and particularly you see those countries or which more sort of deliberately isolated themselves. I think China also, I think, 50s, 60s, 70s, China remained isolated. Then things have been open, mainly because of economy liberalization. So the many Chinese now, you see, they really following American way of life or American culture. I noticed, you see, many Chinese women, you see, dye, change their color of their hair. Oh. I think among Indian, less. So many Chinese, young Chinese, much excited about Western sort of culture or Western sort of way of life like that. I think world, through information, through tourist, through sort of more closer interaction, so far mainly economy, but byproducts were much changed, much sort of positive sort of things now coming. So that's my view. Under the Tingin Surah, learn this way, learn this one. Like that. So I think that's the only way. As I mentioned earlier, population increasing, the economy heavily interdependent, not only nation to nation, but also continent to continent. That's reality. And then on top of that, global, or say the ecology, global warming. So these new reality compel to humanity, we think more wider way, and we should think oneness of humanity on this planet. So I think things are changing. And meanwhile, you see, we have to work. We have to make effort through education, isn't it?
Our next questioner is from King's College. She's the president of the Graduate Society there. It's Katie Fitzpatrick.
Thank you for taking time to share your presence with us. Half of the world's population are women, yet women represent 70% of the world's poor. How can we enable women who face discrimination, inequality, and substantial obstacles in education and employment to break from the cycle of poverty?
I heard one small island in the Pacific Ocean. Their tradition, mother is the leader each family. The female, they consider more important. I think we should learn that culture, I think. many years now, I think 20 years, I usually used to telling people, I express the concept of leadership. When a human being, the original, right beginning, no concept of leadership. Everybody work together, whatever we get, some food, share equally. Then population increased, and farming system also then developed. Then some quarrel or some injustice, or something you see happen. So then leadership, idea or concept of leadership come, develop. At that time, no rule of education. So in order to become leadership, physical strength, like an other animal. So male dominance then develop, usually male more physically, more stronger. Our sort of religious tradition also is sometimes is a little, or say the more emphasis the importance of male. These, because it's a religion for the society, and the society itself, you see some kind of say, habit or some kind of culture, male dominance. Then that is the influence religious teaching also. But then education develops. Education brings more equality. The leadership more important. In order to become leadership, not only physical strength, but also brain or education. So that brings more equality, female and male like that. Now, time come, as I mentioned earlier, in education field, the education about human affection, human compassion is very necessary and very important. So now, time as such, we need more effort for promoting human compassion, human love. Now here, biologically, female have more potential. Some scientists tested, experiment. 2 persons watching one sort of one movie or image. The person passing through painful experience. Then the response from the male, from the female more strong. Female more sensitivity about others' pain. This is a biological factor. So therefore, now a time when we need special effort for promoting human compassion, human love, now female should take more active role in this respect. So that's my view. So therefore, I think 20 years ago, at one time in Paris, one women's magazine, one interviewed. And then in future, Dalai Lama can be female or not, female, is it possible? And I told, yes, very possible. If the circumstances is such, female Dalai Lama can be more useful for Buddha Dharma and serving to people, then female Dalai Lama certainly come. And then I add some sort of joke. If female Dalai Lama come, the physically also must be very attractive. You see, one female face, very sort of not attractive, then less influence. you do not agree that? So I just stole like that. So, in fact, in Tibetan tradition, Tibetan Buddhist reincarnation sort of tradition, some very high lama, actually female, I think over 600 years, or something Dojibhamu, I think almost the same period that of Karmapa reincarnated sort of institution, like that. So there are female, important female reincarnated sort of tradition already there, like that. So female. And then I would like to sort of do some form of teasing. I usually was telling female, the external beauty important, but more important is internal beauty. Internal beauty is really very, very important. External beauty sometimes is attract short period, then gone. Internal beauty there, then the friendship remain long-lasting. So here, one story. In early 60s, one Tibetan monk official, he disrobed in early 60s. Very good one. Very good sort of monk. Very good, I mean, very good officials. I know him very well. So after he disrobed, and I tease him, "Oh, your wife not that much attractive." Then he answered me, "Oh, outwardly not attractive, but internal beauty is so good." So then I have no argument. So internal beauty, warm-heartedness, is really female biologically more potential. That's my view. So I think very, very important. Make more sort of self-confidence. And instead of sort of some feminist sort of movement, some Westerners who are very much feminist, so also used to follow Tibetan Buddhism. And it seems they also wish Buddha should be female. I think some Christian, maybe Jesus Christ, should be female. Of course, you, quite good, you see, Mary and Jesus Christ. Very good. So like that. Okay, good. Now, next question.
The next question you have already answered, because it was about whether the next Dalai Lama could be a woman.
I see.
You've seen into the future and answered that question for us. If you have time, then maybe we'll have one last question.
Yes.
And I wonder if I could turn to Hilary Papworth, who, and whether a microphone could wing its way across just there, who works to support education of Tibetan students in the UK.
Your Holiness, we are so pleased you have come back to Cambridge a third time. You are committed to young people and to education. You are the chairperson of the Dalai Lama Charitable Trust, registered in the United States. The Dalai Lama Trust supports the development of leadership and educational opportunities for young Tibetans. The Trust also supports initiatives that encourage a sense of universal responsibility in the global community. How can Cambridge help?
Costa, Dalai Lama Trust. I think some scholarship. So I think at the moment, how many Tibetan students here? Some? Kuzizore. How many? Ka? Ni. So already two Tibetan students already here. So I think now the number of students whose exam you see reach very high top, but that also increasing. So some sort of help for education field is extremely useful, very helpful. Also, as I mentioned earlier, this is such a sort of famous, world-known, worldwide-known sort of education institution. So some research where modern education still something lacking, how to fill that gap. I think like this institution, I think really worthwhile, some sort of discussion among sort of the experienced sort of teachers and people. I think that will be a great sort of contribution worldwide. So many other sort of education sort of institution or many nation, actually, you see, looking here, such that these sort of education great institution. So I think some, after sort of thorough discussion, experiment, once you start something, then many country will follow that. I think very, very important. Yes? No? Thank you.
Your Holiness, on behalf of all of us here today, may I express our profound gratitude to you for taking the time to come and visit us in Cambridge. I know you have a very busy schedule wandering around the world, and it's absolutely wonderful that you've been able to come and share so much of your time with us this afternoon. So thank you very much. It's been a real privilege and a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Indian origin. Guru. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Good night. Give me this. I'll let her go. Oh, okay. Tomorrow. So, bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you.